Hello, everybody, and welcome to Just Nas Science Podcast, where each episode we debunk ridiculous yet common science misconceptions we find online and get just a little salty about them. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Nick.
But before we get started, we'd love to have you come check out our Twitch page. Twitch is a totally free platform that allows you to interact with us in real time.
We're usually in the kitchen cooking food, but sometimes we do drink out of shoes. Jerry hosts dance parties. You should really click on the link in the description to watch our channel trailer and see what it's all about.
So since the 1960s, there's been a surge in belief that people's personalities are either logical, dominated by their left brain, or creative, dominated by their right brain. So today we're going to discuss where this idea came from and how much science there is behind it.
So the idea that the right brain controls creativity and the left brain controls logic is kind of a half-truth. And I say that because the different brain hemispheres do actually have slightly different functions. However, it's not as severe or dramatic as maybe a BuzzFeed article or Oprah's website will say. It is important to know about your brain. And before we continue, I want to mention that the hemispheres, the two halves of the brain, are not isolated. They're connected by a series of fibers that run across your brain, left to right, and this bundle is called the corpus callosum. The two hemispheres are nearly identical in the way they look and in the brain regions, but they can have slightly different functions. And we'll get into those differences, now, I guess.
So it's not as simple as saying left brain is logical and right brain is creative. Because, first of all, those are very subjective terms, right? What you find logical may not be so for others. So here's an example. It's said that left brain is for numbers and logic, right? While right brain is for free thinking and visualizing rather than thinking in words. But if someone can visualize numbers and patterns that may seem abstract to solve a problem, are they using their left brain or are they using their right brain?
Well, the answer is both. Math skills do use both hemispheres. And that's not just me saying that. That's from actual research. And that's the case for most things in our brain. We tend to use both sides of our brain, though the exact function, again, may differ slightly.
And that reminds me of a high school math teacher I had who always used to, like, do problems and talk about explanations just, like, in the air, as if we could see what was happening. And it was clear that he could visualize it really well, but I was, like, totally lost. I needed to see it written down.
And anybody who is taking organic chem or even probably, you know, college chemistry, you remember those, like, model sets that you would build atoms with or molecules? You're not building atoms. There's a reason that people need those is because not everybody can picture these images and these structures and then move them around in their brain, but some people can, and I envy those individuals.
Yeah, I cannot at all. So let's look at your motor cortex, right? The brain region responsible for movement. Moving the left side of the body uses the right side of the brain and vice versa. So this is particularly where the idea of brain dominance comes from. So your eyes are another example of where information is processed bilaterally, meaning on both sides of the brain. Information from your eyes are sent to both sides of the occipital lobe, the area where visual information is processed. So even if you close one eye, the information from the open eye is sent to both brain hemispheres due to how the optic nerve travels through the brain.
How weird is it for you to talk about brain stuff?
Very weird, because this is more your domain.
Yeah. I'm listening to you talk, and I can hear it.
You could hear how uncomfortable I am about it.
there are these real noticeable differences in the brain hemispheres, and the biggest one people tend to cite is language. Majority of people are right-handed. What is it, like 90% of people are right-handed? Something ridiculous?
It's a big majority.
And the language center happens to be on the left side of the brain, more specifically in the temporal cortex the brain region that runs along the side of your head next to your ears. And people with brain damage to the speech center, say from a stroke or trauma, may develop what's called aphasia, or the loss of ability to understand or express speech. We can get more specific and talk about like Broca's aphasia versus Wernicke's aphasia, things like that. But for simplicity, let's leave it at that.
Yeah.
So the left side of the brain is responsible for speech production and comprehension. Does that mean that the right side can sit there and twiddle its proverbial thumbs? No. No, the right side is important for understanding the tone and emotion of speech. It's how you can know that someone is sad or angry without having to look at them. So, yes, the brain regions do have different functions, but in order to fully understand someone, like their words and the tone, you need both hemispheres.
That makes me think of someone with autism, though, because they typically have a tougher time understanding, like, tone and or, like, picking up on jokes. And so I don't know. I'm not sure if there's – I'm sure there's research on it, but I just don't know about it, if they have a difference in those brain regions that pick up on that.
I learned about this when I was doing my master's, and I don't remember. I know
so much.
When it comes to things like autism, there's something that's called a theory of mind, which is if you tell somebody, and of course we're making large generalizations here when we're talking about autism and autism spectrum, this is just a, you know, overarching concept to illustrate an idea. An individual with autism may, you can tell them something.
And they assume that everyone else knows that information?
Yeah.
Jesus, why was that so difficult to say?
Well, because I was going to explain this test they use to determine that, but I guess I won't.
Okay. All right. Well, some research suggests that there's no dominant hemisphere, right? So a 2003 study looked at the brain scans of more than 1,000 individuals between the ages of 7 and 29 and divided different areas of the brain into 7,000 regions to see which side of the brain was more active in a task than the other.
Which is a lot of different brain regions, by the way.
A ton. But there was actually no evidence of sideness, because we use both hemispheres for most processes, though function can be different across the hemispheres. So this is where, so this is what we call brain lateralization, right? So one example of brain lateralization is in handedness. Nick is left-handed, which means the right side of his brain is used more for manual tasks. But brain flipping can also occur, where the right hemisphere is partly responsible for, you know, language production, but this is mostly occurs in left-handed people. However, again, most of the time, like any sort of large or complicated movement will require both hemispheres, and a ton of brain regions are involved.
Listening to this, you're probably hearing the same kind of thing. Different brain hemispheres can have different functions, but they're, you know, overall you need the whole brain. One might argue that you're using your left hemisphere for logic and pattern recognition. See what I did there? No? Okay.
Sorry, I was focused on getting Jerry stop licking because it's so damn loud. And I didn't want the mics picking it up.
Okay. You know, we talked about brain regions being involved in everything. And let's just use one example of using a shovel to dig a hole. It's a really simple thing. And there's a ton of brain regions involved, you know, the cerebellum for balance and coordination, the basal nuclei, which is sometimes incorrectly called the basal ganglia, for motor initiation and inhibition, the motor cortex to actually control the muscles, sensory cortex to feel the shovel and feedback when hitting the soil, visual cortex in the occipital lobe to see what you're doing, prefrontal cortex for decision making about where to dig, when to stop, how big to make the hole. There are so many more things involved in something as simple as digging a hole, but it's just an example to give you the complexity of your brain when doing anything, and the fact that you truly need both hemispheres for most of everything.
And this goes back to an important fact that, your brain, even though it typically takes up only 2% of a person's body weight, it uses almost 20% of our energy to function because we are using so many parts of it for even just the menial of tasks, like digging a hole.
Yeah, and this kind of goes right into the idea that we only use 10% of our brain. Like, no, you are not using 10% of your brain. I assure you, with 20%, that means 20% of your energy. That's so much.
Yeah, it's a lot. That's why you feel like exhausted after a school day or a long day, even at your desk. Even though you may not physically be doing a lot of work, if you're thinking a lot and you're trying to work through stuff, you feel pretty tired after the day. All right, so how do the brain hemispheres communicate with one another, right? So I know at the beginning of the episode, Nick mentioned something called the corpus callosum, and that's the structure responsible for information passing between the hemisphere. However, compared to the size of the brain and the amount of information that's processed by each brain region, it's unlikely that all the information is exchanged between the hemispheres.
And I'll have a link to a picture of the brain, a cross section, so you can see what the corpus callosum looks like and how it runs through the hemispheres. And there's even something called the anterior commissure, which we won't really mention. It's like the corpus callosum's little brother. But you know, you should look at it, and it'll help you visualize and understand a little bit better about the brain size and, you know, how information is passed between hemispheres. But a good sample of the research that we've done is specifically in differences in brain hemisphere comes from individuals who were born without a corpus callosum. And there are a few reasons why what we call agenesis of the corpus callosum may occur, meaning why the corpus callosum doesn't form.
Okay.
Yeah. Things like prenatal infection or alcohol consumption, specifically between weeks 12 and 22 of pregnancy, can affect the brain in that way and cause agenesis of the corpus callosum. And it's usually diagnosed pretty quickly within like the first 2 years of life. It's not uncommon for individuals without a corpus callosum to experience seizures. So they'll get some type of brain scan and see that there's no corpus callosum. It's actually wild.
I'm pretty curious as to what type of infections can lead to this.
I don't know. I didn't do that much research.
Okay, so there is a lot of information about brain regions and functions that also comes from individuals who have brain damage from, say, like a stroke or trauma, like we mentioned earlier. And the most classic example is a man named Phineas Gage, right, who due to an explosion had a metal rod go through his head and pierce the front portion of his brain right above his left eye. Oh my God.
He was a construction foreman, and something happened where this piece of metal rod, I think it was like steel or whatever, went through underneath his cheek and out his eye and through the top of his skull, and it pierced what's called the orbital frontal cortex. I don't know if Lauren actually said the name of it.
No,
I didn't. No. So, you know, he had this traumatic brain injury. He lived, and we were able to see the results of the accident happen in real time, and it was pretty crazy. Doctors and scientists interviewed family, friends, coworkers, and they all said that he was a nice guy. He, you know, was mild-mannered and he was polite, and afterwards the family said that he was kind of a dick, you know? So naturally we concluded that being nice to people comes from what's called the orbital frontal cortex. Again, that's the brain region directly above the eyes, not exactly on your forehead. It's kind of like right above your eye socket, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, but this is just like one example. I don't think we can really conclude that from one.
Well, we do know that it's part of the prefrontal cortex, which is responsible for decision making and things like that. So it might not be surprising if, you know, you can decide to not say something mean. Well, if you have that part of your brain destroyed, that inhibition center, you just say and do whatever you want. And there are cases like that where people do have problems with inhibition.
But then again, maybe you're just pissed about the accident or in pain or, you know, I don't know.
I mean, I guess it's possible.
That's why older people tend to be a little crankier. They're in chronic pain, you know.
Let's not get crazy. You know, this also kind of leads into a conversation about something called phrenology. And phrenology is, again, like what we're talking about, kind of a half-truth. And I'm being generous there. Phrenology is the idea that different brain regions do different things, which is accurate. We know that. However, some of the other things that phrenology talked about or said they can do was they can measure anatomical structures on your skull and determine different, like the size of different brain regions, and that would determine your personality. So someone can say, oh, you have, you know, from this bone to this bone in your head is too big. It's bigger than the average person, and therefore you might be more aggressive. And that could be used against you, like, you know, if you are being accused of a violent crime. And so there was a lot of issues with phrenology, and that part isn't true.
Yeah, let's make that clear.
I thought you were going to contribute a little bit more.
I don't know anything about phrenology, so I don't want to, I'm not going to say, talk about something I don't know. Spread more false information. It's not what I'm about.
So why does brain lateralization actually matter if both hemispheres are used for most of the time? In an interview with NPR, cognitive neuroscience Dr. Kara Furtemeyer says that it's mostly important in medical context. During brain surgery, the surgeon needs to ensure that they are not damaging any part of the brain that might be responsible for motor function or speech. So it's currently the only way we know to, you know, definitively determine what part of the brain does what. And this was developed in the 1940s by Dr. Wada, W-A-D-A. And so it's called the Wada test.
What do you know?
Wow. Okay. This is the part where I would usually end it. But I do want to say taking a BuzzFeed quiz or some other quiz to determine which personality or brain region you have. Now you really throw me off. Damn it. BuzzFeed quizzes are fun. BuzzFeed quizzes are fun. And it's, you know, it's, you can be more creative or you can be more of a numbers person. You know, I'm a little bit more of a numbers person. I'm a little more detail-oriented and logical. And that's just me. But does that mean I'm using one side of my brain more than the other? Probably not.
Not really. I mean, BuzzFeed quizzes are fun, though. I will say, I'm a big fan of BuzzFeed, which I recently read is like a millennial thing, but like...
To like BuzzFeed is a millennial thing?
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't surprise me.
What? Like, I don't know. Why does it have to be a millennial thing? It's just fun. I don't know.
Well, because only millennials really care about, like, what type of toast they are.
Whatever. Gen Z can suck it.
Don't come at Gen Z. They terrify me. They care about nothing, including their own bodies. Like, they will sacrifice themselves for the greater good without hesitation. Do not piss them off.
Very true.
Gen Z, if you're
boomers.
Gen Z, if you're listening, she didn't mean that. We please don't hurt us. But yeah, so like I was saying, you as an individual may have some personality traits that, you know, fit one category or another, and that's really common. You know, humans love to box things up and categorize things. I'm a right-brained person. I'm a left-brained person. It just makes you feel like you're part of a group, and I guess it's nice in a way. I mean, this kind of thing doesn't really hurt anybody, I don't think.
Right. Yeah, I noticed that. People love to just categorize things. I don't know why we do that so much, but yeah, we love to be one or the other.
And I think it makes it easier to understand the world if you can categorize things and make them all similar or dissimilar. You're like, oh, these things go together, these things go together, and then you can kind of...
Well, it is a common teaching practice, and it's said to be really effective, like to teach opposites and things like that. So maybe that's why it's just maybe it's the way we learn best. But, you know, like we said, I think that's why we trip up on things and why myths and misconceptions like this go on for so long is because we just have a hard time breaking that thought process and accepting the fact that something could be like in the middle you know, in a mix of things.
Yeah, and I definitely think some of it comes from things being taken out of context. Mm-hmm. Like we mentioned before, the, you know, you use 10% of your brain deal. Like, that was a quote that was cut short, and I forget the entire quote, but like, there's much more to that than just whatever. Was it like that, or was it just like a Hollywood thing for superhumans or whatever?
I have no idea.
I don't remember exactly where it came from.
I can't speak on that.
Just now I'm just making things up. But this is how things spread. I'm not editing that out at all. The hemisphere dominance thing, it's more likely that your personality is through a combination of genetics, epigenetics, individual preferences, and interests. But I do want to say that cognitive science research is always changing, and we're always learning more as to what makes us humans and individuals, and we have so much more to discover and learn about, not only ourselves as individuals, but as a species, as humans. And who knows? We might even find out that there are bigger brain hemisphere differences than we know. I struggle saying things.
Yes, I've noticed. But something that actually my mom and Nick and I were talking about yesterday was the fact that the more you know, the more you realize you don't know.
Yes, it's very common.
And I think that's like also something else that people struggle to accept. That people expect everyone in science to have the answers, but science is constantly changing. And that's a good thing. You know, we should get more information, and we should learn more about things constantly. Like, there's so much about our own bodies we do not understand. And I think it was even Neil deGrasse Tyson who says, like, the more education, the more of an expert you become in something, the more you realize you're actually not an expert and you don't know most things. Just because there's just a plethora of information out there that it's just impossible to understand and absorb it all.
That's going to do it for us today. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and especially share it. It takes literal seconds to hit subscribe and click the 5-star review button, and it would mean a whole lot to us. Positive ratings and shares on social media are the biggest ways you can help us spread this good science to even more people. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at JustNazScience, and you can also visit our website, JustNazScience.com, where you can watch YouTube videos, read blog posts, or submit questions and suggest topics for future episodes.
And don't forget, we put out new episodes every Tuesday. As always, thanks again for listening, guys.
Later, nerds.
Later, gators.